No, doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
Is it? Yes, it works.
Is it the problem with this table?
No, no, no.
We can move it. Because somebody put it.
I brought my own analog laser pointer.
Ah.
Do you want to have a...
Is it a laser pointer or an ordinary analog one? But you can get the laser pointer.
Ah, it's okay.
12, 14. Yeah, so I'm supposed to announce you, you know?
Yeah.
So today's presenter is Jens Petter Sandvik. Ah, it's being streamed. Today's presenter is Jens Petter Sandvik, and the topic is digital forensics and the Internet of Things. Jens Petter Sandvik is our PhD student, and he has been in Kripos since 2006, working for them, and currently detached here at Ex-Nis Lab and now EEK. So, can you manage? Yeah.
Yeah.
So hopefully all the equipment works and you got like 40 minutes, something like that. Yeah. And then questions. And by the way, it's supposed that the PhD students, if any here, this week everybody's at FinCE, so that might be a problem. Then nothing. Just, yeah. So you still count? Okay. In that case, if you put some nice questions, there is an incentive here. Yeah. So, please.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Jens Petter Sandvik. I'm a quite fresh candidate here. Started about 6 months ago. I'm here at the NTNU Digital Forensics Group. Going to say a little bit about digital forensics, IoT, a little bit related work, what I'm doing, and what I'm going to do. So my supervisors are Katrin Franke, Hapta Moabi from Norsk Regne Sentral, and Andrea Ornes from NTNU and Telenor. So what is digital forensics? I can also say that I've been was get my conscient degree in 2005 from University of Oslo, and been working at Kripos since then with digital forensics. So what is digital forensics? It is like the science that is relating to or dealing with the application of scientific knowledge to legal problems. So it's like, it's a very broad definition, but we see that it has something to do with the legal system, at least. And it's used in criminal cases, and it's also used in civil cases for managing the civil legal problems. So the definition of digital forensics, it's been many that has tried to define it. This was not the first, but the most, I won't say precise exactly, but most word-rich one, at least. Although I tried to get it a little bit easier wording to identify digital evidence using scientifically derived and proven methods that can be used to facilitate or further the reconstruction of events in an investigation. And of course, definitions vary with author's background, experience, and legislation, because different countries has different legislation about what can be shown in court and what can't. So, for example, in American courts, they have something called admissibility, if evidence can be admitted in court. In Norway, we don't have this. So everything can be shown in court here, and then the court will await the evidence with regard to how it is. So it's like different legislations that affects also the definitions and also the procedures about what this digital forensic area is. when we talk about digital forensics and traces and evidence, it can be nice to think about it like split it into like if it's the device itself, if the computer, if the computing system is a facilitator of the crime, or if it's just a location of evidence. Is it a third party witness? Is it a camera that picks up someone going to rob the bank, or is it a car used in the robbery? So it's like, is it a tool of the crime, or is it just a third party witness? This affects how much trust you can put in the evidence, because if it's like a third party that couldn't be managed by the suspect, it's you can place more trust in the system itself than if it's a system that the suspect is handling. He can put new false traces into it. And it's quite many subfields within digital forensics. Here's just a handful. One thing is like it's a very practical field. It's a very pragmatic naming scheme of the field. If you're doing an investigation and you are doing investigation on some equipment and they have like a bit similar challenges and similar ways of handling it, then you put a name on it and call it forensics. So computer forensics was the first name, and computer forensics and digital forensics was used like interchangeably for a while. But then digital systems got a more wide definition, and you also got your challenges, and then split up into all these fields. I've also gone to just one term that I will use here is evidence dynamics, and it's like nice or it's good to know what evidence dynamics is, because it is the changes that happens to evidence during the whole lifetime of the evidence. So I can give an it's like from the trace, if it's a transfer trace, until the evidence is presented in court. So an example is traditional forensic science, the fingerprint. I put a fingerprint on the table and it stays there. But with time, the oil from my fingers will start to wear out, it will oxidate, and it will be harder to read it, like the more time goes. And of course, other people can come and touch it. The personnel might come and wash the table, and like all these changes that might happen to evidence during the lifetime. And of course also when the police comes and pick up the evidence, it will also change it. They try to protect it, the information in it, as good as it will, but the evidence itself will be a little bit changed. And of course when storing it, it will wear out after storing and so on. So it's like the whole chain here is called evidence dynamics. In digital forensics, we can think about a trace as, for example, a timestamp from the file system. When I open a file, or when I create a file, it will give it a timestamp in the file system, file system metadata timestamp. And this timestamp will be there until something happens. For example, I can copy the file from one location to a new location, then it will get a new timestamp. I can open the file and watch it, then the last accessed file timestamp will be updated. Or I can also try to fool someone and programmatically or rewrite the timestamp in a file system so it looks like it's been happening like a year before or a year after. And all these are changes that might happen. And of course, you have more natural causes also, like a disk error that makes it unreadable or something. So it's so all these changes that happens is called evidence dynamics. And it's important to think about information from one trace. One trace can say something, one timestamp can say something, but of course it's the combination of traces that actually give a more information about what has happened. So IoT, Internet of Things, what is exactly that? So that is a quite big question actually, but the term IoT was first, as I have found out at least, used in 1999 by a guy called Kevin Ashton, and he used it to describe how radio frequency ID chips could be used for talking over the internet, communicate with equipment that was connected to internet, and you can track things all over the globe. And also use sensor networks, of sensors that were talking by themselves. Oi, well, I was, started with, now it's more changing towards smart devices and machine-to-machine communication systems, we're talking about smart cars, smart homes, intelligent transportation systems, e-health. All these things that are processing by themselves, and also with the change toward big data and machine learning, and as I use and as I say, IoT itself might soon be forgotten. Why is that? Heard some critique that says that IoT that is so that is yesterday news and. It's not going anywhere, but sorry for bringing up Gartner in this, but they are a big company and they say a lot about many things, and this is one thing I have found is quite a good picture on how it works, because they have something called the hype cycle that explains how new technology will be viewed in especially the market, but also in media and everything, and it looks like this. You have the time in the x-axis and the visibility along the y-axis, and as the technology starts, it starts with the technology trigger. We got something new, exciting, and then as time goes, it gets more and more visible, and more and more people are talking about this, and it reaches a peak of inflated expectations, where it can do everything, and everything will be this technology in the future. And then it doesn't, get to reach those expectations, so it falls into the trough of disillusionment, and nobody wants to have anything to do with it. And then you find some use cases that are actually useful, and you will reach this plateau of productivity where it's a major product, where it actually does useful things. IoT is about here now. It's been a lot of fuss about it. It will probably go on. When I was first checking this graph, it was on the way up, and I guess it's coming to the reach it now, and of course, when it reaches down here, then probably another name will come up that differentiates it. but the technology will still be the same. Technology will continue, research will continue, but the name will change. That's IoT forensics. Yeah. If you have an investigation. That has this IoT system inside. I'm going to investigate a murder, for example, and find this IoT system. Then it's I want to. It's of course it's computers there. It might be some embedded systems, a mobile phone maybe, data stored in the cloud. You have a network there, and all these types of other. Other categories will be in here. So everything will touch into this IoT system. So the thing is that I want to, of course, if you want to investigate this, then the circle will look like this. You have the IoT forensics thing, you get elements of computer forensics, embedded system forensics, and everything inside in order to investigate this. For my research, I will try to look at this part, the part that isn't covered by the other, what is special about the IoT with regard to all the other technologies. And what is special? It is one thing is the machine-to-machine communication that we see more, or that is promised to be more of in IoT system than in other. You have autonomous processing of data. System themselves will process the data. It's in an ordinary computer system. It's always a human that will do something on the computer, and then it does something with regard to this and stores the result. But IoT system will sit there and get data and process data themselves without this intervention. Can find a lot of redundant data in the system. It's like a system that has been made in one node might be found in another node because they communicate with each other. A huge set of data sources, like all the input from the system will be from several sources. Other communication protocols than we see in ordinary systems. A variety and a huge number of types of devices, data formats, and all this is... Computers are more standardized with regard to this. I've already mentioned that, but data is not necessarily stored the same place as it is produced. So this is at least what I see now is the differences. Forensic investigators today have quite good grasp of IP and computer network infrastructure, and when it comes new infrastructures, they will also have to keep up with that. And it's not necessarily easy to keep up with new and changing technologies. So it's like, if something can be generalized, it's good. So I started with this work by looking at related work. So I'm writing a literature study now. What I found so far is that, of course, I'm not finished yet, but my impression so far is that you have many of the work are talking about frameworks and models for investigation. They talk about a little bit high level how to find all the data and which models are covering the field. And they talk a lot about forensic readiness, how to log data, how to get relevant data in a system so you can actually investigate afterwards what has happened if something happens. And of course, device and network forensics. They look at individual devices and try to find the data and which type of data is in it, and also which type of data you can get from the network. So it's like just a few examples of the models used. You have Oribo that defined this 1-3 zones and next best thing methodology, where 1-3 zones refers to the personal area network. That is the first zone, the second zone is the gateways, and the third zone is the internet, and you have to look for data from one zone and out and follow the data through the zones. And next best thing was a description of how data from one node not necessarily are stored in that node, and it might be hard to reach the data inside a node, but you can find it in connected nodes. So look for data also other places than the actual device. Then it was a digital forensic framework for IoT that was looking at various processes, like a proactive process, more like what we think is digital or forensic readiness. You have the digital forensics, as they call it, that's more the incident response, and the reactive process, that is more the investigation part of it. And there are several other types that is defined. FAIoT is like more this forensic readiness part, where like you have a system, a security system sitting behind the firewall in a IoT environment, and constantly doing the surveillance of the security in the system. And if it sees something that might be an attack, or it triggers something, it goes into the forensic mode where it will store more data than it usually does. So it's like it's more like an adaptive system for logging. Device and network for forensics. There is like just an example. There is a detection of like this routing protocol attacks in 6LoWPAN networks. 6LoWPAN is a method for transferring IPv6 packets over low power and lossy networks, because the IPv6 packet is quite a huge data packet, and it won't necessarily fit into the data packets inside the link layers of very small or resource constrained networks. So therefore they have this 6LoWPAN, that means IPv6 over low wireless personal area networks, low power. And RPL is a routing protocol used in this. You have the forensic acquisition of a system on chip in a... Let's see if I can get back to where I was. Yeah, there. Trackpad is making a little bit faster. System on chip. Yeah, the system on chip is like a processor and memory and peripheral drivers baked into one chip. So that is a common term. And a wireless sensor network node. And also set wave transceiver acquisition. And of course, set wave is like the link layer protocol for the physical network protocol. It's similar to it's on the same level as Bluetooth or Zigbee. So actually this Z-Wave transceiver acquisition, it was a quite interesting article. Was looking at what it contained, and saw that it also was like it's an Intel 8051 microcontroller inside, and it used a shared address space, so it might be vulnerable for exploitation. Just an example of this this routing protocol, rank exploitation. RPL is a routing protocol for low power and lossy networks. It's a sinkhole attack. It's based on that all the nodes, they say that, oh, I know the route to the gateway, and it's a very short route, or my route is very long, and then the nodes that tries to connect, they will select to connect to the nodes that promises a lower rank. And of course, if you get into this attack or into this network, you can say that, oh, I have really, really short route to everything, and then people want to connect to your node. So and it was proposed to sniff traffic at several nodes in a network in order to detect this. This was a very specific detection capability, so it's like they didn't discuss other types of attacks in this article, but I can just show. Here's a network, and it's a direction-oriented directed acyclic graph. So here's the gateway out, and here is this node is connected directly. This node asks about the shortest route to the network or to the gateway, and it gets like these steps, and all the other nodes are like building this graph based on that. And of course, if it gets one node there, that is the attacker, he can say that, oh, my route is much shorter, and you can disconnect parts of the network by doing this. And of course, this attacker can then either route the traffic through himself and out to the gateway, or he can just black hole traffic and render the network unusable. And of course, this is much the same as the attack in itself isn't a new attack. It's mostly the same as, for example, border gateway protocol routing attacks on the internet, where you can route network traffic, internet traffic, through a whole country. I think Pakistan did that once when they were trying to black hole the YouTube server. So they said all YouTube traffic from this net that YouTube had from Pakistan should be routed this way instead, and of course they didn't do this properly, so it's like it was actually covered the whole world instead, so all the traffic for YouTube went to that server. so it isn't a new attack, but it's like a new area. And a little bit about my research questions. First one is, or the main theme of this is in which way is evidence dynamics affected in networks of internet-connected things in application areas such as smart homes and smart transportation, and in which way can digital forensics be performed in such environments? So it's like try to find some application areas, and of course homes and transportations are two places where a lot of evidence or a lot of evidence for criminal activity is. So therefore, it was natural for me to select those areas. I don't know if those are the ones that has the most advanced IoT systems, though, but time will show. And I, of course, talk about evidence dynamics here because I want to see if you remember what I said was different with IoT with regard to other. It was all this interconnected system. It's like the autonomous processing of data, and all this will in greater degree affect the dynamics of the evidence. So I had the three research questions. What are the limitations of current digital forensic methods? Which sources affect the evidence dynamics? And which way does the evidence dynamics affect the value of the evidence? Because these are things that are going to be presented in court, and of course they have to have some value there. And the last question was, in which way can evidence from IoT environments efficiently, effectively, and reliably reconstruct events in and states of the environment? So last is about the reconstruction of the whole historical events, what has happened. And criminal investigation is much about reconstruction of what actually happened. One thing is like the efficiency about it, because if it takes too long time needs too much resources, then it won't be done. It has to have an effect on the investigation, and rather want it to be reliable also, the results. So this is the main questions though. And just to have like an idea about this, was just to how to steal a connected smart car. To have this connected devices, it affects the attack surface. So it's like you have this attack tree. Just to describe, the AND nodes are the square ones, and the OR nodes are the circular ones. So in order to steal a car, you need to find a car, and you need to remove it from the location. So to find a car, I can search a location for a car. I can go up the street and see if I can find some nice cars, or I can search. Or in an internet-connected time, I can search the cars for the location of where they are. The next is to remove the car from location. I can either drive the car away, or I can pick it up. To pick it up, I need a towing truck. But to drive the car away, I need to get into the car. I need to start the car. And of course, can pick the lock, break the window, or tell the car to open the door. And of course, like you see on what is the green nodes here are the ones that, like, I don't say that it makes it easy, because it's not necessarily easy, but it's possible at least with this smart connection. So you see the whole attack tree here is fulfilled by the internet connection. You have the AND node, find a car, that you have the search cars for location there, and you have the other node also going up here. So it's like it's actually everything is enabling to steal a car here. Another thing is to infect a computer system. So you need like physical access or remote access. You can have the live system infection, offline infection, either like push things directly into the physical memory, or like update the firmware before it's running, or when it's starting, remote access, and here it is. The thing I was going to show here was that you also have the same for an IoT system, and you can see that the man in the middle update here. It's like you can hijack the update session of, for example, firmware update session. In order to do that, you need to bypass encryption, access the data traffic, and of course, with the low power network, network nodes that don't necessarily have a good encryption built in, because that is takes processing power. And also, since it's it's often wireless connected, you have an easier way to get to this node. And of course, this one, the credentials, default credentials, that was what enabled the Mirai botnet that was spreading a year ago. It's the botnet itself, it generated like 600 gigabit per second traffic toward the guy that got attacked by it. And so it was quite powerful. And this was IP cameras that had been set up with the default credentials. And I can see that many people, they buy a system, they install it at home and don't do anything more with it, or it gets installed in a hospital, or it gets installed and it won't necessarily change the default credentials there. I also have examples of hard-coded credentials. So it is not necessarily secure systems we get. But the thing is, like, with all these systems that probably will be used for criminal activity, like, we have to have some way of investigating, find out what happened, who did it, why it was stolen, etc. Yeah, my planned work is literature study. That's what I'm doing right now. I want to sample some physical systems, do network samples of physical system, and also see what's inside their hardware and memory. Simulation. I see that it's many IoT systems are quite expensive, so if I can simulate, it's also easier to change configuration and like I said there, scale the system itself. You can change the configuration. I also wanted to do some Monte Carlo Markov chain simulations in order to learn more about how the configuration affects the ability or the capability to do a forensic investigation of it. Can, for example, this way of logging information, can I actually investigate this type of crime with this type of logging? Does it cover the actual data or the actual information I need? And the test benches to verify results. So that was the planned work though. Challenges, systems are not very smart. It's a lot of half-truths in this field. For example, smart homes, they are homes, but not necessarily very smart. It's more like the remote controls. So you have the Philips Hue lighting system, for example. You can use the remote control to sit and play with the lights. It doesn't exist any metrics for forensic capability. It's like, how do I objectively measure that this configuration, this system is better from a forensic perspective than this system? So it's like I have to find some metrics there. Clocks and timekeeping is always a challenge in forensics, and even more so in with more systems, because you have to know which clock is. If you find a timestamp, you have to know which clock it is that set it, and also you have to know how that clock relates to the ordinary time wall clock, because it's not necessarily similar there. It might go wrong, it might be set differently, it might be changed. So it's like proprietary and expensive systems, yes, but think about connected cars. Don't think I can afford to buy a car to do testing on. The market is still quite immature, because you have all these companies selling sensors and system on chips. They're selling for you things. And you have all these companies, you have IBM, you have Google, having infrastructure, cloud services for your things. But where are your things? They are still a little bit, you have many producers that are having equipment for enabling this technology, but it's still, it's a little bit like remote controls and people are finding out how to use it properly. So, yeah, that was what I had, 36 minutes. Questions?
Thank you very much. Any questions? PhD students, please be more active. You will have preference. So.
Thank you for your presentation. IoT has primarily reached the point that it refers to embedded systems, and as you said, system on a chip. And because what exists behind that, having a computer or having a smart device, this exists already. What we want primarily to achieve, and when the main effort for research and for industry goes, is how to enable these constrained devices into with their peripherals, either to have an actuator or have a remote control on something, or collect data from sensors. So my suggestion is to try to differentiate from embedded forensics, because that's where the main focus is, and the main similarity with what you are going to be doing. But my question is, since that exists, embedded forensics exists, and in that domain, forensics readiness is where we primarily go, because we cannot, due to the fact that we're using constrained devices, we cannot actually collect data, we cannot process all the amount of data that we need. So my question is, how do you plan to differentiate from embedded forensics?
The differentiation I want to do is to look more to the systems that are autonomously processing data. Systems that are autonomously processing data, that collect and process data autonomously without, like connected cars, for example. When you drive a connected car, it will talk to other cars. It will do this automatically without the human intervention, other than that the human is driving, probably, for a while at least. I want to find this system where the data is not, how should I explain this? It's like for a phone, for example. I'm using the phone. The sensors are recording my moves there, and it's like it turns off the screen when I put it to the ear. It turns off. It will detect, the light detector will detect when I put it in the pocket and take it off to the pocket. And this is like a very data that is used today in criminal investigations, but also it's data that is very close to the production of the data, to the storage of the data, but with more connected systems, you can see that data will be processed before it is stored, and what can it still tell us about? So I don't know if it answered your question so much, but it's more this autonomously processing part that happens before the data is, or between the data is produced and the data is acquired. I want to look into.
Oh, so you're referring to applying forensics on the final board, let's say, that is collecting information in a specific room it is transmitted to the main hub.
For example, or data that is temporarily stored in nodes as they are used in the system itself. So,
do you have any plan about how to optimize, given the fact that these are highly constrained devices?
Yeah. For example, one of the system on chips I was referring to here had a memory of 2 kilobytes,
yes,
and a flash memory of 32 kilobytes. So it's not much data you will find in the system themselves before it's sent to the final destination, or not necessarily the final destination, but you have several layers of where the data is going to from. For example, in a wireless sensor node, you have the sensor themselves. It will route traffic to a gateway that will send it to maybe a server that might send it further up to a cloud server and might process data for various types of applications during this whole time. So it's like most systems don't store data to be able to investigate what has happened, but they store data for other applications, and we use that data in an investigation to see if we can reproduce anything.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. So actually, what you are aiming at is to develop a framework or a model?
No, I'm just... In the beginning, I'm, or what I'm hoping to do is to see how see how the dynamics of this changing evidence, how it affects the how strong conclusions we can make in court. That is one thing. It's like how does the whole processing part here affect the strength of the evidence or the value of the evidence. And the other is like I also hope to achieve is to find the ways either that I can suggestions to protocols or suggestions to existing systems for how to log data so it will be valuable in investigation, or so it's more like the forensic readiness part, or how to actually handle the systems because much of criminal investigation is to prioritize and to prioritize away things that has a low probability of giving you any answers, and seeing how data can be valuable or not so valuable, it can give a suggestion of how to prioritize the investigation in itself. So that is.
You have also given us one, two examples.
Yeah, it was a couple of.
Like the one car stealing.
Yeah.
So are you also interested in finding the solution to detect that a car is being stolen?
So it's like this was an example of how the internet connectivity also can be used for contemporary crimes.
Mm.
It's not only like these computer crimes that break in, making your device a part of the botnet, but it's also like part of the contemporary crimes.
And how to get from these examples to your overall goal?
Yeah.
Do you have you seen a methodology for it, any approach for it yet?
not exactly for this, because this was more like this thought experiment about how the internet connection affects can affect crimes that is happening. So it's this was more like a thought experiment about how can or which new areas do we have to look into for old-fashioned crime also.
So it's like
we have to take this into account also. It's not digital forensics gets more and more to do.
Okay, thanks.
So.
Close. I thought these graphs that you showed on slide 16 and 17 were very interesting, but I'm wondering how much you rely on them being complete. For example,
the examples here were just like examples to show to connect it to crime areas.
But you make a nice schedule, and at some point you are going to investigate these endpoints. Yeah. There are many more endpoints than the ones that you have. For example, you get into the car by picking the lock, by breaking the window, or by convincing the app to open.
Yeah,
I personally would wait until the owner comes, and when he opens the car, I will hit him over the head.
It's true, and that is also one of the.
Yeah, but so in your scheme is not complete, and it will never be complete. How smart you are, because there is always this crazy guy who comes up with a different solution.
That is also one of the, in my opinion, drawbacks with this. Even though if the attack tree is like a nice way to visualize something, it is still hard to, like, you have to
in order to have a complete attack tree, you have to have the complete view of all the eventualities also. So it's like, so the attack tree in itself is needs to if you're going to use the attack tree for example protection to like this, you have to like cover all the eventualities,
yeah.
And that is quite hard to do actually. So it's like but I like to use this as an example more
okay.
than
yeah.
More than the to rely on it in a eventual investigation or like this.
Okay.
So
you had a question?
Yeah. Mm.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hello. In the traditional forensics, we use offline and live forensics.
Yeah, yeah.
And how can we relate or differentiate this evidence dynamics for the IoT?
You think about, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah,
that
or how to collect the data to the evidence.
Yeah, of course you have like several ways of collecting evidence, both from running systems and from
yes.
From dead systems, if like turned off systems, and of course some of the like embedded systems, they don't have any flash storage or non-volatile storage for data. So you have to, if you want to collect data from the device itself, you have to do it while it's turned on, because it, the all the like used data is in volatile memory. So when you turn off the power, it will disappear. But of course, the nodes in themselves, especially in this low resource or resource constrained devices, since they have very little data, they have to either process the data, aggregate it, process it, or they have to send it to a node with a bigger
okay.
And that will typically be a computer or maybe small or a little bit bigger microcontroller. So it's like data will be not necessarily in the nodes themselves, but it will be collected somewhere, maybe changed and maybe so it's like it's in a way to the final storage, where because another thing is to be aware of is that usually when a break-in happens, you have like people are using the system, then it happens a break-in or some criminal activity, and then they're continuing using the system until it gets detected. And when I started at Kripos in 2006, it was said that the average time from a breaking to the detection was about 300 days. So it's almost a year from from someone breaks into a system until it's detected, on average. So of course, that means also that last thing I saw without don't have the